Gary Wurkamp.
And she's Jill Hughes.
Join us for
The Untold Stories of
Shadow Gallery.
A follow-up to Carved in Stone, Shadow Gallery released their third studio album, Tyranny, on September 22, 1998. It has 14 tracks and clocked in at 73 minutes. The band lineup consisted of founding members Carl Cadden James, Brent Allman, Chris Ingalls, Mike Baker, and Gary Wurkamp. On this album, they brought in Joe Nuvolo on drums. Tyranny is the band's first concept album with themes about political corruption, long-distance love, and hope weaved throughout. This album was their most ambitious album at that point, bringing in guest vocalists James LaBrie of Dream Theater, DC Cooper of Royal Hunt, Lara Jager, as well as Paul Chow on violin. Cover artwork was done by Reiner Kollwitz. Okay, so we're back for episode 7 of Shadow Gallery, The Untold Stories.
Where we tell all the stories.
And we're going to talk a little bit about your favorite songs that are on the album and your writing process for that album and, you know, any other funny things. I think I indulge a little bit about my favorite parts of the album as well and what your thought process was as you were writing and recording it.
I believe Brent started it with some music with Chris, and Carl was the director of this record once we decided we wanted to make a concept album.
And I'm also interested to hear about how you picked the guests for this album. We had some really big, they weren't maybe not so big back then, but they're really big now, names. James LaBrie from Dream Theater. We had DC Cooper, who is known for bands like Royal Hunt. You guys just had some really awesome guests on this album that had some really believable characters. And, you know, this was a concept album. So, you know, you had to develop these powerful characters.
Exactly that. I mean, they weren't just singers or musicians. They became the character for the storyline and learn about it and, you know, act it out.
Good day, my fellow citizen. I don't mean
to. So we have Brent and Carl back with us to talk more about Tyranny. And Carl, I have a question for you. What was your process for writing the lyrics for the album Tyranny?
So probably like writing the lyrics to Ghost of a Chance. I find that to be a very moving piece on Tyranny. I rented a cabin up in the heart of the High Peak region of the Adirondack Mountains, and I had ideas for the vocal lines for the song. I had all the music, you know, that Brent and Chris had done, and I was in the middle of writing Tyranny, and it was like on the tip of my tongue, and it wasn't happening. So one of the nights while I was at this cabin, I had a little handheld cassette recorder, you know, and I climbed a mountain at night by myself.
Noticing a theme
in the
here.
The Adirondacks.
There's a theme of mountains climbing.
That seems like a big boy thing to say. I climbed a mountain at night all by myself.
Sorry, girl.
Well, that was what happened. I went out and I grabbed a flashlight and a little cassette deck, and I went and I climbed this mountain. And at the top of the mountain is a New York State fire tower where the Rangers, you know, can go. And I climbed onto that fire tower on top of this mountain, and it was a full moon, and there's all these big clouds up above, and it was like magical because it lit up the entire Adirondack. So I'm sitting on this fire tower, and I'm looking out in the distance at Mount Marcy and Mount Haystack, you know, the tallest mountains in the state of New York. And I went up there in the dark, and I came back when it was just starting to get light. I'd been up there all night and I had everything completed for it. But I think like the surrounding of being, you know, all by myself in the middle of nowhere on top of a mountain at night with a full moon you know, that was so inspiring. It was crazy inspiring, you know, and I was able to solidify exactly, you know, what the song meant, and express it through the lyrics. And I really felt like I very much captured, you know, what I would consider one of the moodiest pieces of composition I've ever heard in what Brent and Chris wrote. I really felt like I captured the mood of the music by itself in lyrics. And I, to this day, it's one of my all-time favorite Shadow Gallery songs.
Yeah, me too.
Definitely.
Very happy to have been a part of that creative process on every level. And that was one of the songs where I had to go back to Brent and said, this needs to have a more final ending. It's got to sound like the end of something.
Okay, let's see. What can we do?
So, Brent, what are some of your favorite songs on the album, and anything that brought, you know, that brings back some really good memories about creating your parts for the album?
That's a good question. Well, Ghost of a Chance is one of them. It's a beautiful tune. And, the ending of it was fun to do. We're working on that together. Oh, was it you?
The ending. That I did the ending.
Yeah.
That was me.
Well, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. With all the modulations.
You wrote all the ending? Oh my God. Yeah. Well, I believe you, man. It's 20 years, man. I can't remember shit, but I love that one a lot. Victims meant a lot to me. I think that was an early on song. Lyrically, it means that was a good one. That was one of my favorite ones just because of the story it tells, but just the melody and going, oh, you know what we can do? We can do callbacks to these other melodies from these other tunes. And I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I just thought it was a good idea at the time. And now I love it, right? That these little things are here and there, little pieces from this tune or in that tune, that sort of thing. Those are amazing. Also the, New Old Order. That's my favorite one. That's the best tune on that whole record by a mile, I think. And, those are my like two, three favorites, I think, out of it. I don't really skip anything on the record when I put it on, which is not very often.
That's an album you listen to front and back.
Yeah.
So Gary, yeah. What were your favorites to work on?
Oh gosh. You know, for me, I look at it as different writing teams because I didn't have this so much before this album. I mean, I came into Carved in Stone and a lot of it was done. I was marginalized as far as what was left to contribute. So with this, I didn't really know how I was going to write with each person. And, you know, writing with Brent was very different. I got great memories of writing things like Roads of Thunder with Chris. And that was like, I think the first time Chris and I sat and put together a song from scratch by ourselves. And, with Carl, you and I actually started working on, I believe, for the Carved in Stone sessions at Tom's cabin. We didn't get very far, but I remember starting that song. That was like the first thing you and I worked on a few years earlier. But having that chance to, work with you guys individually, because we weren't, probably a lot of people don't know this, we're not a band that sits together, five people in a room and says, all right, let's write a song. It's usually teams of two people. And then Carl will work on, obviously, a lot of the lyrics and melodies. He works with Mike. But standout songs to me, Hope for Us in the recent years has become one of my favorites. Just, I think that is lyrically and rhythmically how those lyrics are phrased is just brilliant. I think that's just, it really, I'm in awe of that song every time.
As
I hear
is
it.
Your accompaniment, your orchestration was incredible on that. I don't know how you did that with the keyboard you had, managed to make those sounds.
The really crappy MIDI sounds. Yeah, no, I don't know.
It's good. It still holds up. It doesn't sound dated to me when I listen to it.
Yeah. To me it does. I'm like, oh, hey, it's 1994. Listen to these keyboard sounds that are supposed to be violins. Although we did get to work with Paul Chow on a couple songs. So we did. That was our first entrance to working with a real violinist, which was fun. Different topic. But those are some of my favorites. I've got just different moments. From a personal standpoint of writing, But listening to it, I hear it very differently. I tend to like the songs that I didn't write, because I get something more out of hearing something that you and Chris put together, or that Carl and Mike, you know, or you guys worked on. But
oh, I totally get that.
I don't know. Yeah. Ghost of a Chance is definitely, there's moments in that song that really give me goosebumps every time. Yeah, you know, so I don't know. It was a fun experience, although very painful. Save that for later.
I think I've listened to the album probably like 20 times or more, and over the years, and it's still my favorite song, which you haven't, I mean, you mentioned earlier, is Mystery. That one just keeps coming back to me every time, even though I love all the other songs.
Cool,
absolutely
chorus.
Love the song Mystery. It's very, yeah, it's catchy. I think it spoke to me because, not to show my age, but that was the kind of the era where, you know, I was really big into using like AOL and AOL Instant Messenger and stuff. And, you know, it talks about like connecting through the internet.
That was the thing. Yeah.
And that was the thing. And every time I listen to that, it kind of brings me back to that era and thinking like, that's how I was communicating. That's how I met boys. Okay. So it was through AOL.
I'm not going to say it.
I'm not
going to
say either.
Anyway,
Carl, you got a favorite song on the record besides Ghost of a Chance you mentioned?
I don't find one weak moment. I think every single second for me is great. I'm with Brent. Maybe probably New World Order. Actually, New World Order into Chased into Ghost of a Chance is. Sometimes I have difficulty separating all three of those songs. They just flow together for me, and those are probably. I don't know. It's hard to say. I love them all. There's no weak moment for me, you know, there's no embarrassment moment for me. I think they're all awesome.
It's not one of those moments you have to cough over a part that we didn't like get the vocal right or something. You ever do that when you're younger, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you're playing a song and you know, you didn't sing the bridge right. So you say like while you're playing it for someone, so what are you doing this weekend? You know?
That's hilarious.
Yeah. The whole point of any like really, really good story is that it is structured in a way that you have this emotional cathartic buildup and then you have the catharsis itself. And I think this is an album that has a catharsis that, you know, is pretty clearly expressed through New World Order. It has Chased, which is, you know, the catharsis goes right into an action scene that is very captivating, and that the catharsis, it, you know, is kind of carried straight through into Ghost of a Chance, where lyrically and from a story standpoint, you have these two cathartic moments between, you know, facing true evil in New World Order and, you know, this personal reconciliation of Ghost of a Chance and then your coda, Christmas Day. So it's very interesting to structurally have those for me. And it like holds my interest 200 years later, or however long it was. But I think just the strength of that catharsis gives me Ghost of a Chance, and New World Order is probably my favorites on there.
Okay. So,
well, hold on. I got one last thing for Carl on that one.
Okay, go ahead.
It'd probably help Gary. If you explain what catharsis means.
That's not nice.
It has something to do with cars, right? Catharsis.
Sorry, go ahead, Jill.
That's terrible.
All right. So I want to talk about the different guests that you had on this album. So in previous albums, you didn't have, I don't believe you had guest singers on the other albums. And, you know, working with other people on this album.
Nobody.
Maybe you had bigger budget now. You know, we had DC Cooper, which I'd love to hear how he came to be on your album. And, you know, was that who you had in mind all along, or was there somebody else that was you wanted to have sing that part? You had James LaBrie, you had Laura
Jager
as the female voice. You talked about working with Paul Chow. Is that correct?
Paul Chow.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. And, you know, were there any others?
I don't know, but I can tell you, and I know Carl has something to say about this too, that for the longest time, New World Order was called Alice Gallery for me before we had, because we wanted to have Alice Cooper. And that was the name on all of my floppy disks and all the backups, Alice Cooper version 12, Alice Cooper version 14. And it was going to be Alice Cooper. And Mike was thrilled by that. And then it turned into, well, you tell this part, Carl. Who's it going to be next?
It was going to be Ronnie James Dio. And when I wrote the vocal parts for New World Order, I had Ronnie James Dio in my head as the singer who would be singing it. Now, so total fanboy, Dio's my favorite all-time vocalist.
Good choice.
And he embodies very accurately, you know, the sense of evil that I wanted to portray in the song. The mood of the music in that composition speaks very, very strongly to, you know, something ill on the wind. And so we had a, you know, we reached out to Dio's management. We set up a meeting. Dio was on tour. He was playing in Reading, Pennsylvania. We scheduled a meeting with him and we went down and he never showed up. He never came out and met with us. And we left there and I was like, well, fuck that. So, and it's...
What else would you think?
This is something that's really important to me. Like, we got DC Cooper to do it, and I absolutely positively don't want anyone to ever construe DC's performance to be an afterthought to initially, our very first conversations having Alice Cooper and then, you know, having Ronnie James Dio do it. DC Cooper came in and endured a whole evening of me laying out exactly what this story was, and, you know, endured, and it was very obvious
word.
To him.
Endured is a perfect word for that.
There, there is no short way of getting across. Like, think about it like this. Tyranny is a movie. And for any actor or actress to find their place, to recreate the structure of a character as intended by the writer, as intended by the director, you have to internalize it with a good degree of understanding the basic principles of proper acting, motivation, background, those sorts of things. And Tyranny was, you know, it was so complicated that you really don't, to do it right, it required more than a 40,000 foot overview. So that poor chap had to sit there and listen to me go through the whole thing.
I think he's still in therapy now.
I am.
That's what I've heard.
Dude, I'm still here.
No, I can't, you know what? I can't picture anybody but him singing it. He just acted it out so well.
Communications, you're at our fingertips now.
Yeah. So, yeah, fast forward to the next day. we go into the studio and we start doing it. And I was like, wow, this is it. He really, like, he owned it. He took to heart all that stupid shit I said the night before. And he internalized it and turned it into, when you listen to his performance, you get the sense that, you know, he is like, I always bought his character.
He played the part
in the way he sung things. It was more than just him accurately singing the lines with the right pitch and putting some emotion behind it. He captured the mood that Gary had in the music. You know, that's a rare gift. That is a hard freaking gift. And he did it, you know. So in hindsight, would it have been nice to work with Dio? Maybe. But maybe it wouldn't have. I believe everything for a reason, you know. And if gun to my head had to do it over, I would ask DC Cooper first. And not have Ronnie James Dio do it, because
me too.
That's just how it cemented in my brain, you know. So DC Cooper took something very challenging, something very difficult, and made it epic. You know, he did the hardest thing you could do. He captured the emotion of the music behind him in a way that was 100% believable for me, and I'm the hardest. You know, I would be the hardest critic on the planet because I wrote it. I wrote the lines. I wrote the lyrics.
And for those who actually got to see it live on stage at the Rites of Spring Festival, and where else did he do it?
Athens.
I did it three times.
And then in Europe, too, at Prague Power Europe, right?
No, he did it in Athens.
Athens, okay. I mean, those who got to see that live, I think he brought it to life on stage too.
If we didn't think he was good, why would we fly one guy across the world to sing one half of one song? No.
That is true.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, everybody outside of the band who contributed was brilliant. James LaBrie was brilliant. We wrote for his solo stuff, and I worked with him quite a bit. And to know James he's such an awesome dude. Like, if I go to Canada, I want to hang out with James just because he's a super awesome dude. And I really need to talk to him after these years, because once he did the same thing, he made a believable character. But my God.
Yeah, he had a small part to play, but I love what he did with it.
Some epic stuff those two guys did, you know. Their singing is just brilliant. I love both those guys. Such great singing. And Laura, you know, I know she's in a club band here in the area.
We were in a progressive rock band again. So that was what I was doing just before Shadow Gallery. It was my own... my own version of Shadow Gallery, a prog rock, but not quite as crazy. But yeah, it was nice to get her back involved. She also did the Pink Floyd Time song with us a few years earlier.
That's right.
Yep. Or maybe a year.
She was awesome. Earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Happy to have such a gifted female vocalist. I've had a lot of people comment to me about her performance. I just love it.
My life, I have had such an emptiness that no one could ever fill. Somehow your dreams, they've touched my life. You see, I think I like.
She was every bit as believable. When you hear her sing, you are transported away from the mechanics of the performance and just drawn into the story. You believe what she's saying. You know, you believe she was living those things that she was saying. And that's it. That's all you can ask for. She captured the emotion of the music composition.
Well, thank you all of you for coming together. Appreciate you know, telling these stories. I know it's hard to remember things that you did over 20 years ago.
Yeah, I thought I wrote the ending, The Ghost of the Chance, but
The Ghost of the Chance? You know, you can't even say the name right.
Well, you helped me. You told me to keep modulating.
More modulations. Give me another step and a half modulation, please.
But, you know, this was an album that I think really, you know, the epic one that people really started to take notice, I think. And we'll talk a little bit about that next episode, about all of the fun you had recording the album and all the fun stories of actually putting it together and getting it out there and marketing it. Thank you very much, Carl, Brent, and Gary, for being here on another episode. Well, that wraps up another episode number 7 of Shadow Gallery, The Untold Stories. The next episode, we're going to bring in some guests from the Tyranny album. So you get to hear from somebody other than Gary, yes. Carl, and Brent. We're kind of sick of hearing of
God.
Yeah, really.
Well, if we talk to a couple of people that joined us on the record and see what they have to say about it and see if their memory and recollection is in fact different than ours.
Awesome. Well, thank you everyone for listening again to Shadow Gallery, The Untold Stories. If you have any questions for the band, you can email us at shadowgallerypodcast@gmail.com, and we'll talk to you all again later.